On the podcast today, we are going to dissect chapter 37 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 37th episode of the 81 Meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
Tao abides in non-action, yet nothing is left undone. If those in power observe this, the 10,000 things would develop naturally. If they still desire to act, they would return to the simplicity of formless substance. Without form, there is no desire. Without desire, there is tranquility. And in this way, all things would be at peace.
The Tao is constant in non-action, yet there is nothing it does not do. If the sovereign can hold on to this, all things shall transform themselves. Transformed, yet wishing to achieve, I shall restrain them with the simplicity of the nameless. The simplicity of the nameless, they shall be without desire. Without desire, using stillness, the world shall steady itself. So this chapter goes into the essence and nature of Wu Wei in Taoism. Now we're not talking about Wei Wu Wei, which we find in Confucianism, which is doing, non-doing. In Taoism, we're actually talking about non-doing itself and how in following the path of Wu Wei, the world and even our own lives and our own inner world begin to self-organize.
Yes, again, the intelligence of the nature's its essence, isn't it? Like, again, nothing gets undone with non-doing, right? So everything gets done without doing any action when we don't put any effort or striving towards something, because nature itself is a self-organizing intelligence. Mm,
that's right. And we also know this personally, all in our own lives. Sometimes we're striving so hard to do something in our own life and we're like bashing our head against the wall. We all know this, but then it's only when we allow a little bit of space in our life that things begin to organize themselves. There's a type of metaphysical power, which is what Lao Tzu would call the Tao, which is naturally there in our lives, but often we build a dam in the river and we don't allow the river's power to become our power, which is dirt, which is the virtue that is at the core of our being. But we continue to fight the circumstances of our life. We try to control our life. And the Tao is just saying, sometimes you need to let go. Sometimes you can control. It's not a black or white situation. It's just shades of gray. Sometimes you can control the circumstances in your life. You can control when you go to the bathroom, for example. Sometimes you can't control the bathroom. You might be on a bus or something and you can't control that, right? But there are a lot of times where we just need to let go and allow sort of the world to self-organize. We have to remember that even our own path is natural in our life, right? Even though we may follow artificial means, our life in general is natural.
Yes. I think a lot of people would counter-argue with this idea because, okay, if you do nothing, then how can anything get done, right? But again, we're not asking here to just blindly believe things to just happen on its own. We are requiring here to understand the principle of nature, like principle of universe, how in essence, how it actually works. Mm. And we cannot swim against it. So it's not about blindly believing things to happen on its own. And we, like in a sense, that we're expecting things to happen for you, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what we were talking about. Here is we need to understand that how universe actually functions and operates itself. Mm. And just like, again, in Taoist philosophy, the concept of Zhidran, becoming of itself. And when things just happen in nature, we cannot stop nor push it to happen, mm. right? We just let it happen until run its course, right? Mm. All we can do is just sit and wait and carry on from there, right?
Yeah.
That happened just to our life as well. And that's what we are trying to understand. So when we try and make something to happen and it just not going that way, mm. then that's a sign for us to take. Mm. And that's, again, gives us opportunity to learn to be humble.
Yes.
Right? But if you were to keep forcing it, then it will keep knocking you back and knock you down again and again, then that it's time for you to just take a break mm. for that moment.
Exactly. So in this chapter, Lao Tzu's talking about that the Tao is eternal, right? And so it's constant. There's no type of cessation. It's constant, and it's constant in our lives too, though it's hard for us to align with it when we are constantly doing. And so this is actually the nature of Wu-Wei itself. It's only in embracing that, then you feel that energy moving your life along. Whereas before, you were trying to organize your life a certain way according to your own ego of how you think it should be, and then nothing ever happens, usually, right? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But in most cases, it doesn't happen. So that's why Lao Tzu and Zhuang Zi emphasized Wu-Wei in just allowing that space in your life, and then the right things will come at the right time in your life, right? And none of us are disbarred from this. We are all a part of it, but we get ourselves in trouble when we forget this naturalness, like you said, that Zitran, that aspect that everything is of itself, self-so is nature, right? So it's spontaneity of itself. And so we forget that we are spontaneous as well. And so then we organize our lives a certain way according to our ego, and then, you know, we bear the consequences of our own decisions. Yes. Whereas Lao Tzu is saying in this chapter, even if we looked at rulers, right? Rulers, if they didn't try to control a situation, they would allow the world to be as it will, and then that may give them a more skillful means of governance, as opposed to trying to control each and every situation according to their own personal agenda. And so, as we know in Taoism, Taoism is about eliminating all personal agendas. You cannot be part of one group, or you favor this political ideology. You are automatically not a Taoist from that perspective, because Taoism is anti-ideological, it's anti-political, it's anti-group think. A lot of people, especially in this day and age, will do anything to align with any type of group, no matter whether it's religious, racial, sexual, whatever. People will try to align with a type of group because they think they are part of that group. And essentially, when you make that decision, then that is against the way. And that's why you don't feel the way in your life, because Lao Tzu is saying that's completely silly.
Yes.
Because we are all fundamentally a part of the Tao. And in the Tao Te Ching, it does illustrate that. It says that the Tao loves and nourishes all, but does not lord it over them. And so we all have that power in our life. And that's why sometimes bad things happen to good people, right? Because they forget the Tao and they try to do too much in their life. Maybe they're too pious, maybe they're too charitable, and then people take advantage of them, and then they bear the brunt of those consequences that they make.
It's a big mistake is that we think we are our own entity, right? And we are somewhat not part of nature, but we are actually nature. We are part of nature, as well as we ourselves as species, we are nature as well.
Yeah.
But because of a lot of distractions outside and lots of noise outside, that we easily forget. So that we kind of solidify the idea of individual entity. I am this person, I am doing this job and whatnot. That kind of gets reinforced more of the idea of ego, to say. So because of that reason, we easily forget how the nature takes course on its own, right? So it's something that we need to always remind ourselves. And again, that's how we can become humble to whenever and whatever the nature takes its course, whichever way it needs to go.
Exactly. And it also explains that in this chapter that when we emulate the Tao, exactly how the Tao is, its natural Wu-Wei nature, is that we've already mentioned this briefly, but things just fall into place in your life when you're actually coming from that place. Now, as you said, a lot of people will be skeptical of that type of thinking, but just try it. It's a, you know, a personal challenge to each and every one of you watching and listening to the podcast, is allow that space in your life and watch things fall into place in your life where there's kind of this metaphysical guidance going on. And I know that may sound woo and new agey, but just allow that in your life, and then you'll start to understand what the actual Tao is, and then you'll know then what's the path forward for you. And maybe you want to be a writer or something, and you'll feel the Tao in your life because certain situations happen. It's as Joseph Campbell said, the universe opens doors for you where there are only walls.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what happens in all of our lives when we let go and we sort of, we give away the power that we always wanted to get the power that we never knew existed, but we actually, that's what we always wanted. We just never knew that that power existed, and that's the Tao, right? And so what happens is when things start falling into place with you, then you start to align with the right people. You start to align with the right circumstances. This all happens. But in saying that, Lao Tzu has a warning in this chapter, subtly, that even when that happens, say if you're working on a project, everyone's in the flow of the Tao, so to speak, you can be very enthusiastic. You want to go out there and achieve everything and do this and that, but you need to know when to refrain from doing too much. Because it's like martial arts. You need to be skillful at applying pressure, but you need to know when to refrain. It's understanding the cosmic principle of yin and yang. How to conservatively use the yang, but remain in the yin and always embrace the yin. And that's how we're supposed to be as humans, but we forgot that. And so we live in a yin deficient world where we're all yang. And so then we're all hyper enthusiastic. We're all trying to make this and that. And then people are burning out left, right, and center because they're trying too hard to accomplish something and not allowing that space in their life so that the Tao can take over and make things happen for you.
Yes.
And so we've all fallen for that, especially in our younger lives, right? Like, especially when people are studying and this and that, you're trying so hard to get the grades and this and that, and you've just left no space in your life to even consolidate memories.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to sleep at 2 a.m, you're waking up at 6 p.m, you haven't consolidated anything that you've studied yesterday.
Yes, yes.
And then the test the next day is completely useless.
Yes, yes. Well, that happened a lot to me, actually. I have no memory, the memory function is completely lost. But yeah, so again, like instead of inserting ourselves as an agent, like agent to the world, like again, the individualistic way of identifying ourselves as an agent. Instead of doing that, we need to embrace as we become like an instrument for the Tao, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we are, let the Tao take the course of your own life, if that makes sense, and you just be away from its way, really.
Mm.
So that, again, in that way, things will fall into place. And again, time to time, it'll challenge us to, you know, move things here and there so we get obstructed by it and we feel frustrated and whatnot. But again, that's the time to, again, move away from the obstacles. Mm. So let the Tao take its own course, and wherever it will be, will be. And yeah, we need to, again, the acceptance, isn't it? Like whatever it brings to you, you need to be able to accept, and it sometimes takes a lot, but yeah, that is also part of nature.
Yeah. Well, this is the integral Advaita of Taoism, right? The integral non-dualistic perspective, what you were talking about. That subjective agent that thinks it's running the show, and it's the subjective perspective that we need to down-regulate. Not just in Taoism, this is also in Advaita Vedanta, Vajrayana Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism, and these non-dualist schools where you find in Vajrayana, for example, the great teachings of Dzogchen, and obviously Advaita Vedanta in Hinduism, where it's not your will, it's only Shiva's will.
Yeah.
You think that it's you doing this, but it's something greater than you. Okay, you can celebrate the achievements and this and that, but as Lao Tzu warned, don't get too caught up in that because it's not really you. You're part of something much greater than who you think you are as a subjective person. And even if you think about that, even in a very generic sense, think about Alan Watts' metaphor of the planet peopling, right? Just as an apple tree apples, the planet peoples. So we are part of something much greater, and not even just the Earth. We're part of the whole multiverse, universe, whatever you want to call it, the whole cosmic sphere, and you're an outgrowth of that. So all you really are is a localization of the one consciousness.
Yeah.
And the problem is we identify with the equipment of this localization, this focal point. So we identify with the body, the mind, and we forget our ultimate nature. The body and the mind is functioning in a certain way because it wants to use you in a certain way to achieve whatever result it's going to achieve. And if you look at it from a Taoist perspective, there's not really a reason for it to happen, because essentially, as Zhuangzi said, it's aimless in a sense. Like in aimless wandering, that's actually what the nature of the world is. It's not something that we come to a logical conclusion about. Because, you know, if Zhuangzi was arguing with a scientist is trying to argue with Zhuangzi about what's the logical reason for the universe, why are we here, and this and that. And Zhuangzi is saying, you're missing completely the whole point. The whole point is just to live and just to be.
Yeah.
It's not to overthink about why we're here. And this is why he emphasized rambling at ease, yo in Chinese, to ramble at ease, to live an aimless life, but somehow in doing so, you experience the majesty and the beauty of this world, rather than trying to analyze and calculate why are we here, what is the neurons in my mind doing. You know, it gets to a really nutty place where you try to crack the egg into 1,000 pieces.
Yes.
And Zhuangzi said, no, you should have just embraced it as a whole. Mm-hmm. But you decided to peel it apart, and you think that you're going to find the nature of existence through subtraction. But that's not how it is.
Yeah, nowadays what a lot of people think that intelligence is to know a lot, as in very rational way. Again, with the lots of information nowadays and on your tip of the hands and tip of the fingers, that you have so much information, very convenient to know a lot of things. And if you remember all this information, apparently are very smart person or intelligent person. But unfortunately, a lot of people do believe it, and especially the young generation nowadays, they just regurgitate what they saw, what they read on social media. That they look like they're a smart person or know more than others, and so they just want to stand out in front of everyone else, right? Mm-hmm. That's the nowadays the definition of being an intelligent or smart person, unfortunately. But obviously in Taoism, it's completely the other way around. Real sense of intelligence means that just a sweet spot between rational and intuitive mind, when it marriages come together, they're complete in the middle. Spot, that's where your true intelligence can shine through of itself, right?
Yep.
So nowadays, the intuitive part is not getting recognized at all, right? People don't acknowledge how important it is to just lose your mind sometimes and just let life take its course and just play. You just play within that game, so to say. Like, you just sometimes you need to, you know, turn off your phone, turn off your computer, and just be away from all these distractions, go into nature, and, you know, play with the animals and enjoy the sun, enjoy the what the nature can provide for all of us, the trees and flowers and all these things. That's where we feel actually very relaxed, because that's our natural state, actually.
Yep.
That's when intuitive mind gets stimulated, and that calmness can only bring the real sense of intelligence, I think.
Yeah.
And that's what we forget, and it's very easy to forget. Why? Because of the screens nowadays are everywhere, so we easily get distracted, and they look so fascinating and interesting and take your all attention at once, so you completely forget, you know, like what's happening on the other side of this. The brain.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's where we are at, unfortunately. But that is, again, gives us opportunity to remind ourselves what makes us really intelligent, which is an intuitive mind.
Yeah, that's a great point, because the younger generations have reduced everything to logic. And you and I have experienced this many times, actually, where some people in the younger generation will think they actually know what they're talking about, but they may have just read it on Wikipedia or on a social media post, and then you can tell that they don't really know it, because as to your point, they're only operating in the rational part of the mind, their prefrontal cortex, and the majority of their mind, where the intuitive faculties arise, they are completely disconnected from that. And we're seeing that in the modern day where younger people have a harder time reading facial cues. They are awkward in conversations with people and even in their own age group because they're constantly looking at the screen. And so when we overlay this into spirituality, and we've seen this personally, where we've had young people who say that they know or they have knowledge in something, but they're always fidgeting, they're always playing with their phone. That is the red flag that they don't really know, because once you understand this knowledge, you become calmer. You play less with your phone. You don't even want to play with the phone because you are coming into contact with that undifferentiated consciousness that Zhuangzi talked about, and Lao Tzu and Ramana Maharshi, whoever you want to talk, that impartial perspective. And so you understand the intuitive faculty. And I'll be serious here, that, and I've said this on the podcast before, if you're always playing with your phone and you're always engaged with some mental activity, you're never going to understand the depths of Eastern spirituality, the understand the nature of reality. You can never. There's no two way about this. You can't understand it. Because you've got to continually fall in love with silence, because silence is the nature of the mind itself.
Yes.
And so the more you come back into that intuitive place of that emptiness, where you understand that the mind is empty, spontaneous, and free, you fall more in love with that than playing games or scrolling the Facebook feed. This is all cute, right, for connection and this and that. But if you're constantly attached to it, this is the problem. This is the problem. You can never go deep into it. And you and I have held things before where we've told people not to use their phone and this and that. But it's like a drug addiction where the people continually play with their phone, even though we had suggested not to. And so it's a real blind spot for a lot of people. And to speak to what you were talking about with that intuitive aspect of mind, one of the greatest stories in the Zhuangzi text is the happiness of fish, right? Zhuangzi is talking about the happiness of fish to Weizi, one of his good friends. And the interesting thing about this story and the Zhuangzi book in general is a lot of the younger generation, they can barely understand the Zhuangzi. Now, the Zhuangzi is vague and mysterious, don't get me wrong. Our generation, everyone listening and watching and older, find it difficult as well. But the younger generation find it very difficult because it's such an intuitive book. It speaks to something deeper within us. But it does it in a way that's very clever, because it circumvents logic and rationality and gets you to that deeper place without logically doing it. Zhuangzi he's a magician at doing that, right? And so in the happiness of fish story, where Zhuangzi sees the fish just jumping around and playing, and Zhuangzi says to Weizi, he says, "Look how happy the fish are." And then Weizi says, "How do you know they're happy?" And then Zhuangzi says, "How do you not know that I know they're happy?" So, you know, we have this kind of dialogue. But the point is, in the story, one of the aspects of the story, we won't go in depth, we may do that another time, is that Zhuangzi is saying to Weizi that you are ignoring the intuitive part of reality. Because just as we can see fish playing, or we can see some dogs rolling around together on the ground, we know they're happy without having to logically break it down or rationalize it.
Yes.
But we live in a world, and Zhuangzi obviously still lived in that world as well in the Warring States period, where people continually over-rationalize things and said, "Oh, well, how do you know they're not happy? We don't have any evidence," and this and that. And it's like, why don't you trust your own sensibility to the world? Mm-hmm. Why don't you trust your own intuition? This is how we understand facial cues and this and that. And this is why some of the younger generation now talk about how do you know I'm angry? How do you know this and that? And it's like, well, your face speaks 1,000 words. It's not rocket science. It's something that is an evolutionary sensibility that we've all developed.
Yes.
This is what intuition is. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me, your one little generation are telling the rest of humanity that ever existed, that intuition is incorrect. It is. We do have intuitive errors. We make intuitive errors all the time. But intuition is correct primarily most of the time, especially with the subtlety of life, with fish playing in the water, all right? We know that the fish are happy, and we know when the fish are angry.
But I believe the intuitive error itself, it can it might come from rational analyzation, I think, analogy,
I think. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there is a obviously the negative side of just trusting intuitive, but that itself we will intuitively know when it happens, I think.
Yeah.
So in most cases, it is, I think, more beneficial as a human species to trust our own intuition. And again, that is a true sense of intelligence come from. When we talk about, let's say how, if anyone know the ancient Indian people come up with the idea of zero.
Yeah.
Right? The idea of zero as in mathematics and in numerology and whatnot. We can get into the very intellectual way in that way. But the only reason, not only reason, but one of the many reasons the why they did understand the concept of nothingness, it's because our the pure consciousness, the level state of pure consciousness, as in Brahman, that's identical in Atman, in the individual, in us, so that they understood that concept of nothingness in Sunyata in Buddhism.
Mm.
So that's how they also had an idea and a good understanding of zero, the concept of zero.
Mm.
So again, that's a perfect marriage between intellectual mind and intuitive mind, that the wisdom and tradition that they had, right? So without that kind of understanding, they wouldn't have idea of what zero is. I mean, we won't have zero, I guess.
Everything is something.
Yeah.
Everything is something. Yes. Not everything is nothing. Yes. Everything is something.
Yes, yes.
And even when we talk about Taoism, Taoism comes from that zero perspective.
Mm.
You know, it is a meontological system. It's a science of nothingness, basically, or a system of nothingness, I should say, which is identical with Brahman. Tao is identical with Brahman in the sense that they're undifferentiated consciousness. It's the one undifferentiated consciousness, the one substratum that connects us all as one. And so to go back to sort of what we were saying towards the end of this chapter is that to really connect with the Tao, it is imperative that we free our mind of distractions, as you were talking about before. We need to free our mind of distractions, because how can we actually experience Wu-Wei or even know what Wu-Wei is if we're always doing?
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people these days will make a statement, a false statement, that, oh yeah, I just do everything, but I'm not there and this and that. But then you see them get angry and so forth and so on. And so you know it's complete bogus. And so we have to be serious about this. Like, have you actually experienced what Wu-Wei is? Do you know what it is?
Mm.
And you cannot know what it is if you're always thinking, if you're always distracted. How many times did you play with your phone today? Just ask yourself, how many times did you look at that screen? And that's something we all need to ask ourselves, particularly if we are focused on understanding the deeper knowledge of these traditions, particularly Taoism, because we just can't have the distracted mind. And I mentioned in a few of my books, I think Science, Practice, Humility and Enlightenment Now, where when we understand the subtlety of that sort of divine energy and its relationship with nothingness, emptiness, shunyata, if you will, is that it gravitates to what is empty. And so that is how, like we mentioned before, when you allow space in your life, it enters and does its work, whatever it needs to do. It won't be how you think it was going to turn out.
Yes.
Right. But this also goes over to how we create in the first place and how we develop ourselves, cultivate ourselves and kind of attain a greater understanding of the world from this perspective as well. Because when you have an empty mind, the Tao, and they say in Hinduism, the Dharma, the virtue, goes to what is empty. It can't go to what is full, because there's a dam in the river. It can't use you. If there's no dam, then the river is flowing freely.
Yes.
And so the only way it can do that is if that aspect of life is empty. And what we're talking about here is, as in terms of spiritual practice, is if your mind is empty. Because the nature of the mind, again, is empty, spontaneous, and free. And so if it is in its nature, the Tao, Brahman, if you will gravitate towards that, and whatever happens will happen.
Yeah.
However it uses you will use you. But it will be in a very subtle way, and it will be in a way, as it says in this chapter of the Tao Te Ching, which will bring people towards you, which will change the world in a subtle way. So in Chinese, you have yin, right? And yin is mutual interdependence and harmonic resonance. So when you align with that, you experience this yin phenomenon where you bring people towards you because, not because you were asking them to, but because there's kind of a gravitational pull that whatever that person is doing, there's something sincere and real and authentic about what they're doing.
Yes.
Now, obviously, in the modern day with pop culture, this is manipulated because of clever marketing tricks and stuff like that. But we're talking about in the spiritual aspect. We're talking about maybe the spiritual teachers that you resonate with, or maybe just the friends that you resonate with, and maybe the path that you're following.
It's spiritual, but also I think it's very principle, natural principle based philosophy as well. It's not like when, not in a way that people would take it wrongly in spiritual per se. It's philosophically and it somewhat logically makes sense too, because yes, where does water flow? The lower place. This is just, it's just how it is. We cannot change it.
No.
And just like that, in the nature, it gravitates towards something that's empty, empty and spontaneous.
Yeah.
Its movement is spontaneous. So that if we become that, the Tao, the way we always live through you, and you become just a complete empty vessel of the Tao.
Yeah. Beautiful. And that lowness, emptiness is related to one of the core principles of Taoism, is humility,
yes.
Right? Having that honest humility that is not contrived, that's actually a real humility. It's not an unctuous humility that you find in Charles Dickens' novel, David Copperfield. It's an honest humility, real. And we all have that, as Lao Tzu and Zhuangzi even mentioned this. He mentioned it as a sprout, like a moral sprout that we have that's just natural. We have this natural humility, but it gets crushed as we go through socialization and education and everything, and it just gets crushed. And then we become go-getters, and whoever's in our way, just get out of my way because I need to get over there. But when you remember the humility, when you remember your nature of the Tao, it's natural that you harmonize with that humility. And as you said, that Tao seeks the lowest places as water does. And then that's where that paradoxical power comes from, because water being the most paradoxical, powerful force in nature. Likewise, if you have that authentic humility, which is not contrived, and your mind is immersed in that nothingness, in that stillness, in that presence, more often than being distracted, then watch what happens to your life. You know, you will bring something into the world that no one could ever imagine. And even if that's just bringing another peaceful being into the world, you'll attract people to you because that's your ultimate nature, is that. And so that's really the nature of this chapter, isn't it?
Yes.
So guys, we hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you guys next time.